This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And boy, do we have a special guest. He's very close to my heart because he's was a former Philadelphia Flyer. His name is Reggie Leach. Yes, the Reggie Leach. And his new book is called My Story, The Riverton Rifle. Hello.
How are you doing, sir?
It's good to talk to you. It's really, really nice to talk to you. I've talked to Bernie Perrant in the past. So I did an interview with Bernie about, I guess it was about a year or two ago. And I remember...
He's a real good friend of mine, so he's a great gentleman.
You talk in the book about how close you guys were, the Broad Street Boys, and you're still close today.
Yes, we are. You know, after all these years, you know, you get, you know, one thing about seeing the guys all the time, the stories get better every year. They get bigger and better.
That's right.
Exactly. So we just keep on making the stories bigger and better. It's like these fish stories. You know, you go fishing, and all of a sudden, next time you know that your fish is just huge. So,
right.
But it's great. It's just seeing the guys, being around them. It's like you never been away from them. You know, you spend 10, 15 minutes with them, and it seems like you were there all the time.
Exactly. So, how did this book come about? Did somebody approach you about this book, or how did it come about?
You know what? I had so many people over the years wanting me to write a book about my story and about myself, and I wasn't ready. I didn't know what direction I want to go with and stuff. And then when I moved back to Canada 9 years ago and learned more about my culture and got back to getting involved with hockey and just generally my family life and everything else, and then I said, "Well, I think I'm ready. I think I know what I want to do with this book. I know I had other writers call me about writing a book, but they wanted a show and tell book, and I wouldn't do that."
Right. Well, that's good.
This book itself is. But this book I wrote is mainly I was dedicated to my grandkids and to all the kids that need a little lift in their life.
Right. How many grandkids do you have right now?
So I only have three.
Well, three is enough. That's great.
That's for sure. Yeah, I love them because one thing about grandkids, you can spoil them and give them back.
That's right. Give them back. Well, as you get older, it's tougher to have kids and have little kids run around. It gets on your nerves. You can't help it.
Oh.
I mean, as much as you love them, they keep
I love it.
You love it. That's good. I just remember.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
But I mean, you had two spectacular years with the Flyers, and I can't imagine the memories of that. I mean, 61 goals in one season. I mean, you must have been flying high after that season.
Well, yeah, it was just a matter of I was top of my game that year, and everything went in the net, and everything that I shot towards the net went in, and you know, you don't get too many years like that. I think I had four good years until the real good years in Philadelphia, and now the ones were, you know, average years for me, I guess. But it's like anything else is that, you know, they always expect you to do this. They hire you to score goals, so you score the goals, and next thing you know, they want you to back check, so, come more defensive. But then, that takes away from your offensive stuff, and then they get mad at you because you're not scoring the 50, 60 goals.
Exactly. I mean, you make it look so.
You're caught in,
yeah. I'm sorry.
So you're sort of caught in between what they really want you to do.
Exactly. I mean, you make it look so. I'm watching you win these games, and I did, believe me, I was always watching these Flyers games. They were so exciting. But watching them, you make it look so easy. But we all forget how many years of practice that takes to really get to where you got to.
Well, you know, it's not only myself, but anybody that plays in the National Hockey League, you know, it's you have to be very, very dedicated to play at that high level and the pressure that you have playing. You know, the pressure today, like the pressure when we had, is not as half as bad as today. Today is you don't even have a private life, or you don't have anything today, because everything is just inspected right down to whatever move you make or whatever thing you say. And,
right. And
you know, you've got to be, these guys today got to be very, very careful of when they go out, and you know, especially with all the technology, with the iPhones and everything else that's going on in this world, is that these poor guys can't even breathe right.
Exactly. They have no privacy at all. You step off the ice and you got cameras in your face, and people want to know these things. And you know, and I was reading about
right, you know, Ken, you know, if we had all that stuff back when we played, oh my God, we'd all be in trouble.
And then now that you've got social media, everybody can take a picture of you anytime, you know, and you know, they try to make you look bad. It's like it's insane anymore.
It's just the way that people are. You know, you just gotta, you know, the way I approach life is that you just take it one day at a time and do the best for yourself and the others that you're involved with, and then you go from there. You know, be kind to everybody, and that's the way I look at it, and then your rewards will come back.
I can still hear in my head Gene Hart saying that you guys had won the Stanley Cup. I mean, I hear that playing over and over my head. It was such a great moment. I mean, it's such a thrill for the whole, for all of Philadelphia. I mean, those 2 years were just like heaven for us, you know?
Yeah, I just realized that, I'm not sure if you got it, but they had some stuff on the thing that it's been 50 years now since the Flyers came in the league.
Wow.
I think it was yesterday. So, you know, and you have all this other stuff going on, and, you know, Mr. Snyder been the same owner, and which is really great.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, you know, he's such a good man, Mr. Snyder, you know.
He's still around, huh?
I think that if you read my book, I had some couple things in there to say about Snyder, and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that, you know, the thing is that with my book is that, and we're talking about my book, is that I learned from my culture. I'm Ojibwe First Nation, and
nice.
My book is based on the seven grandfather teachings. So all the mistakes I made in my, as a young adult and a young person growing up in my hometown of Riverton, and then next thing you know that, you know, and mistakes you made as a pro and after hockey. And then you know, I learned all this stuff, and then I put it down in my book of what I learned from it and the teachings I learned.
Right.
And I think it's a great thing for my grandkids and everybody that's reading that book. It's a, I had really good reviews on it. It's a real good read. It's not a real, real long book,
mm-hmm.
but everything's right to the point. And I think it's just wonderful how well it took off. You know, I'm still overwhelmed of how well it's doing.
And the pictures are terrific. Now, is this a picture of you with your son here? I see a picture.
Yeah.
That's your son. What's his name?
Jamie.
I was going to say Jamie. I want to make sure I have the right one. Boy, that is such a great picture of you guys. Now, what year was that taken?
Is that the one with both the Flyer stuff on?
Yes, yes.
I don't have, that would be in probably in 80, maybe 85, no, not 85, I'm talking about, about 85, 86.
30 years ago then.
Yeah, because he would have been playing midget hockey.
Right.
At that time.
Great looking kid you got there.
He was playing for the little Flyers.
Yeah. So he loves hockey as much as you do.
Yeah, he lives and breathes it. He's a professional teacher in hockey, and like we said, we have the hockey schools together, and he's the brains, and I'm just the one that goes out and gets the contracts and get people to bring us in, and he's the one that organizes everything. So,
what is it about hockey that you have loved so much over the years?
I learn off him.
Right.
I learn off all the young guys I teach it.
Right. What is it about hockey, Reggie, that has so encapsulated your life? I mean, what is it?
I think Canada in general is that everybody grows up in hockey. You know, I lived in Philadelphia for 34 years, and only games I seen in those periods of time of when I was playing them after I retired, you know, only hockey I seen was the Flyers every so often. And then when I moved back to Canada here and got remarried, and, you know, my wife said to me, she said to me one day, Rich, how come we don't watch hockey? I said, well, I wasn't used to watching hockey. And then I had to start watching it because all the kids were asking me different questions about different players and everything else. And I didn't realize how crazy Canada is about hockey. It's 24 hours a day, and I'm actually like that right now too, because I watch about three games a night now.
See, really?
And just to keep track of what's going on, and with all these new players and what they're doing, and I listen to all the so-called experts and the fans every so often, and I'm not a fan. You know, I don't criticize the players and stuff like that, because I know how hard it is for them to do perform out there. And you know, I have friends that live on the island here, and I listen to them at coffee when you go for coffee, and they'll say, did you see that play? This guy made all these mistakes and that. So, you know, you got people that think they know everything.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just lay back and listen to.
Well, you've turned your success into helping other people out, and that's just a wonderful thing. I mean, you've made a difference in kids, a lot of kids' lives, and that's got to feel really good.
Well, you know, like I said, is that I'm more proud of what I did after hockey. Hockey to me was just a stepping stone of my rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because hockey is just a short period. Hockey is just a little piece of my journey. And that journey was a great journey for me with the hockey, but the journey I'm on today is more gratifying to be with the youth and talking to the youth and trying to keep them on the right path. And it's mainly because of the mistakes I made as a young kid, and I don't want them to make the same mistakes.
Exactly.
And I think it's for me, it's a wonderful experience. I get to see so many beautiful kids across the countryside, not only First Nation kids, but everybody. And it's, and you know, the thing about this is that I have a new generation of kids today that know who Reggie Leach is. Kids that are 9, 7, 6. All these kids know who I am. And which is, makes me really happy because, you know, they know that I did play hockey, but they don't really know at what level and stuff like that. But they know me as a person, and which makes me feel great.
You're good with kids. You're good to, and you've turned that goodness into helping out kids, and I find that very moving, and I find that very special. And not every athlete does that. I mean, there are athletes who are all about themselves, and but giving back is you know, a lot of athletes don't have time, or you know, like you said, today is just like crazy with publicity and doing this and doing that, and you know, and athletes don't always give back what they should, but you know,
some of them are so busy. So like I just spoke at a business conference the other day, and you know, 600 people. I said, guys, you know, it's great to have money. It's great to have a great successful business. But the most important, guys, don't forget about your families. Don't forget about your kids. You know, I've seen it too many times where a young 12-year-old or 13-year-old will come up to their parents and say, oh, can I talk to you for a few minutes? And the parents say, oh, no, I don't have time to talk to you anymore. But I don't have time. I don't have time to talk right now. And the talk never comes about. And what happens, these kids feel rejected. And you know, what happens with a lot of young kids today is that there's so many suicides and stuff like that. And I think that's one of the reasons. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because the parents don't pay enough attention to them.
Absolutely. And you know,
today with a lot of money, I always say, oh, I'll buy you this, I'll buy you that. But that's not what the kids want. They want some attention. They want some love. They want some hugging. They want some, you know, feelings back from their parents.
Exactly. And it's not going to be there all the time. There's going to be a point where they don't want that anymore. So you got to get it while you can.
No.
I mean, they're going to grow up and they're going to want their own things, you know?
But, right, and then the worst part about it, then they're going to treat their kids the same way their parents treated them.
Right, exactly. You know, it was hard for you to.
It's a cycle.
You played for what, 13 years, right, in the NHL, and then you gave it up.
Yep.
That was hard for you to give that up. How did you
do that?
It was,
but I had, I had to make a big choice in my life at that time. went to rehab and all this stuff, and I had an opportunity to go back and play. Yeah. After I came out of rehab, and I went out and I skated for 3 weeks to 4 weeks to get in shape, and then I finally realized I can't do this because I'm jumping back into the fire again.
Mm-hmm.
And I rejected it because I wanted to keep my life straight.
Exactly. I mean, you were at one point very heavily into alcohol, and I mean, I guess after a game that can be, you want to celebrate and the alcohol comes out. It seems like it's almost like a given that that's going to happen at some point a lot of times.
Well, I think back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that's the way sport was. I wasn't the only one that drank. And if you looked over I could name you back right now off the top of my head, I could name you probably 25 guys that are in the same situation that I was in the 70s. And you would be shocked at some of the guys I would name.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's not about naming, though. It's about doing the right thing, I think, today. We live in social media is so easy to point out other people's faults, and yet the people that are pointing out faults have faults of their own, I mean, we're all at work.
You're right. It's something that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that social media, that people become famous on social media. I mean, if you're on it enough, but pointing out other people's failures is just not. It's such a pointless thing. I mean, to try to bring other people down, does that really give you any satisfaction at all?
Well, some people don't have a heart.
Yeah.
They don't think. They don't know what it's going to hurt. Other people, the family members, and stuff like that.
And it's out there. It's going to be out there for a long time.
Yeah, it's going to be out there. And then it's like I said, is that the guys that are oppressed, they think they can do whatever they want. So they push it as far as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they are.
What turned you around from getting away from the alcohol? I mean, what really was the turning point for getting away, for going into rehab?
I think it was just about time. My life at that time was a mess. I just got divorced and everything else. And I always said 1985 was a great year for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got divorced the same year in 85, and I quit drinking the same year.
Right.
So it's 85 changed everything around. I finally realized that what I was doing was wrong and crazy, and I had some really good friends to help me along the way. And you can't do stuff like this by yourself. You gotta have a support system, and I had the best support system around.
Yeah. And one of them was Bill Barber, I see in the book. I mean, he seemed to really help you out a lot.
It was Billy and Clarky and all the people that were the Flyer alumni at that time. My alumni, my teammates were the ones that helped me out the most.
Mm-hmm.
The same ones I used to go out with all the time.
Now,
and those are the ones I give credit to.
Right. Is Bobby Clark still with the Flyers? Is he still working with the Flyers, or is he retired now?
Oh, no, he's still there.
He's still there.
He's still there. That's what I said. He's still there.
He's going to be there till he dies.
Same as Billy. Billy's still there, too.
Really? Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, and Bernie Perron's there.
Yeah, so they're all have an active hand still in it. It's their life, I suppose, in a lot of ways. But do you have other hobbies besides hockey? I mean, are there things that thrill you as much as hockey? Besides your grandkids, obviously.
Well,
you said,
I love the landscaping. I did landscaping more years than I did in hockey. I did the landscaping for 22 years.
That was dangerous there for a while, though. reading those stories in the book about the landscaping and what was going on, that's scary stuff.
I loved it. It was an experience like anything else. Is that all these places I worked at, you only have to worry about 3 or 4% of the people. The rest of the people are great. They're normal. They're normal people, and I loved them. And
right.
I had so much fun with them over the years. And
you gave people a chance, too.
It's like Yeah, all the time.
That's what's great about when you have a bad, something bad happened to you with your alcohol, you can make it turn around and you can understand other people. You can empathize with other people, what they're going through. And that's what makes it so wonderful.
I understand this stuff, you know. Because I went through it and everything else, and you know, the thing that gets me a lot of time is that you have these people that are so-called experts, and you know, they're working at the say the rehab center or whatever, as a doctor. They're trying to tell you how you feel, and they haven't got a freaking clue how we feel.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, unless you go through
a book, they have a feeling through a book. Okay, they can read it, and but they really don't know. Even like a drug addict or alcoholic or whatever, is that they haven't got a clue how we feel. They can direct us.
Exactly.
What they think is the best for us.
But that's
like anything else.
And that's what's great about this book. The young kids can read this book and realize that if I have problems, I can turn my life around too. Because this guy did it, I can do it too. So that's a great feeling.
The book itself is like I said, it's an easy read. I have little cousins that are 10 and 11 years old reading this book and understanding the book. That's the big thing about it, that the kids can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no swearing in it. There's no crazy stories in it. And, you know, it's just that things that I believed in and the things and the mistakes I made, and I tried to explain it to the best I can. You know, if you look at the book that you read, is that there's a few areas that where I cut somebody up.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, but at the end, I made amends to them, and they were part of my teachings. I didn't realize what this person was doing at that time.
Now, today. Were you on the team when Pelle Lindbergh had his car accident?
Nope.
You weren't on the team then.
Pelle was in the organization at that time. He was playing in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a young rookie when I knew him and everything, and then the year that he died was in 45. It was in 85, I believe.
Okay, that was well after you were already out of the. My sister used to go.
He was a good goaltender at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was
the tragedy. My sister actually was like a groupie, and she used to go down to the stadium and meet the players after the games and everything. So she was really big into hockey then. So then you have a family, and you still like hockey, but it's not your like you said, it's not your main objective. Your family has to come first.
I still love the game. I love going to the rink, and I don't go to the rink that much anymore. Besides teaching with my son Jamie with our hockey schools.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy watching the games and talking to people about hockey, and I talk to the young kids all the time. I go in there and talk to them before a game, or, you know, give them an idea what, you know, what hockey's all about and how to play it and what kind of attitudes you should have and, you know, stuff like that. You sort of build them up and, you know, I have my grandson. My grandson's actually not a bad hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
He's 10, and I tell him all the time, off ice, I'm your grandfather.
That's right.
Off ice, you're just another player. And, you know, and I will tell you if you're doing something wrong, if you're lazy, I'll tell you that.
There you go. Well, it doesn't help them if you don't. I mean, if you just coddle them,
they don't
learn anything.
Yeah.
They just think they can get away with everything.
Sure.
I mean, kids today, you know,
yeah,
you really
that's
have
right.
to...
Right.
They ha- like
I remember,
you-
I remember his one quote. I remember his one quote last year. He says, "Oh, I did that drill last year, right?"
Yeah.
He's 9 years old. I said, "Yeah, you did it last year as a 9 year old, and you go screwed it up, and you're doing the same drill as a 10 year old, and you're still screwing up."
Exactly.
So go up there and do it right.
That's right, and you have to be. And honesty with these kids is the only thing that's going to work. Because if you're dishonest with them,
You know, the thing about myself, too, is that I get to talk to thousands and thousands of kids across Canada. I sit down with them. I treat them just like I want to be treated. I sit down to them and on eye level all the time. I never talk on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not I'll stay on the same floor level because we're all treated the same.
Exactly, and that's the way it should be. I mean, we should all respect one another. But what a typical game for you back in the 70s when you played. What kind of hours did you work? I mean, you obviously worked during the game, but I mean, what was the preparation like? And how much time did you spend at down there?
Our practices are back in Philadelphia, hour and a half, 2 hours at the rink.
Right, and that was before the game.
Practiced and everything else. Well, before the game, I would be at 7 o'clock game, I'd be at the rink at 5.
You'd be at the rink at 5 and practicing.
2 hours before.
So basically, it was a 6-8 hour night before you were done. I mean, it was just like a regular day almost.
Well, it was, yeah. But yeah, well, you know, you get up, you sleep in the afternoon, get up at around 4. I always got up at around 4:15, showered, got dressed, and be at the rink by at 5. And then just you tinker around. You didn't go for your pregame skate until 6:45. I think it was 7:30 games at that time.
Right.
And you know, you had your pregame skate at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you just tinker around with the boys, get your sticks ready, and joke around, and have fun, and get ready, and away you go.
I was just curious what a typical day was like for you back then, and what it was like, and then you have to deal with the press afterwards. Of course, the press wasn't as crazy as it is today.
Oh, there was hardly any press. You know, most of the time they only talked to Bernie and Clarkie and stuff like that.
And you could slink off and go home, be with your family.
Oh yeah.
But some of the press I would tell them,
I said, just put in what you want, because why waste my time in talking? You put in what you want anyhow. So
that's right, true. But how much?
No, really, I had one guy, Jay Greenberg, used to be like that. I said, Jay, don't even talk to me, because you're just going to put on what you want anyhow. So why waste our time to each other?
Exactly.
I still tell him that today. Every time I see him.
It's like a running joke, but it's true. I mean, they write what they want to write anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then if you tell them something, they interpret it their way anyhow. So what's the difference?
Exactly. You don't win. Nobody. The only people that win are the people that make the papers. You know, they you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I laugh so much at Jay all the time. You know, Jay's a good guy, but. So.
Yeah, exactly. But I was going to ask you about the traveling. What was the traveling hard on your family? That you were always going to different, you know, you traveling around the United States?
I don't think so. You get used to it. You know, it's, you know, my wife, I was married in junior, and I did a lot of traveling at that time, and I think she just got used to it. I think the wives, a lot of times, need a break away from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's like anything else, is that if you see too much of something, you know, later on you don't appreciate it. And I think with going on the road and letting the wives have their own space and so don't forget though, most of the wives had children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had
we had our children at that time, and then you know, they had to look after them, and so.
I think it's a lot worse for baseball because they play twice as many games of baseball. But I mean, it's still you play what 80? You were playing what 80 games back then a year? Something
but
like that.
Baseball players make a lot more money than us too.
that's for certainly true. I can't argue with you on that one. But
you know,
but I mean, athletes work hard anyway,
for sure.
And you know, they just it isn't as easy as just going out on the field or in the rink and play. You really have to work at it. It's something,
right?
And that's another thing you're teaching kids hard.
I think today's athletes, they work. You know, you have to be in shape all the time. When we played in the 70s, we went to training camp to get in shape. You know, there wasn't no body fat content and all that stuff. They measure you for this and that. You know, I know that 1980 or 79-80 in the Flyers, they started to bring in guys to it that are physical fitness and, you know, lifting weights and running and stuff at that time. That didn't happen until 1980.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nowadays it's
so
like...
prior to that, you know, you just... Yeah.
But
nowadays, you have to be. You got to be in shape 365 days a year now.
Exactly, and
these guys out there, they're amazing.
And the agents are so much more involved
with
the players.
Guys, you know, Yeah, you know, it's like anything else. People say, well, you know, how come you guys didn't do it? Well, that wasn't the way that hockey was played.
Yeah.
At that time.
And imagine you, imagine yourself.
I said, hockey changes every.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I said hockey changes every so many years, and you know, the hockey. You know what I have to laugh about today's hockey is that I remember back in the '60s that when we used to play against the Russians and the Swedes and all these guys, and I remember some of the top brass at that time in the National Hockey League that were supposed to be our brainstormers that says, "Oh, we'll never play this kind of hockey."
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what the hell do you think we're playing today?
Exactly.
All European hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say.
It's hockey. I like it now. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, it's still.
You know,
it's still hot.
You know, the referee is no goddamn any better.
Yeah. Exactly.
They got to be the worst in all sports.
Do you?
Our referees in the National Hockey League.
Do you like any other sports, or is it only hockey that you really enjoy?
I watch baseball, football.
Do you? So you're.
You know, I like soccer. My daughter's is a coach in women's lacrosse.
Oh wow!
In Texas.
Very cool.
So I get to. She's actually like I'm very proud of what I did as a family. Like I played with Team Canada in 76. My son played with Team Canada in 89. And my daughter played with Team Canada in 92.
Wow.
So we all represented Canada.
Like father, like son. Oh. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how many awards did you win? I see you won the Conn Smythe, and you win the All-Star Game twice, and of course you won the Stanley Cup twice.
I led the league in goals 1 year. Another year I was off a couple, about three or four goals. And so, you know, I think out of the, you know, I won the Conn Smythe trophy and I won the most valuable play in the playoffs and won MVP and All-Star game. And so I did that. I still hold a bunch of records in the National Hockey League. So which is not bad for me.
And in 74 and 75, you played all 80 games both years, which is impressive.
Yeah.
Didn't miss a game.
Yeah.
You don't seem like a type that gets sick very often.
I didn't mean to get sick. I didn't get hurt.
How did you manage
I tried
that?
Horse one time and I missed. Oh, I don't know. And you know, I know they sat me out a few kinds of games. And you ever read the Pat Quinn book?
No, I haven't.
No, it's Pat. He's a pretty good. He was a really good coach. He really liked. We liked each other. And he says that when he was with the Flyers in 70s, he came with the Flyers in 77, I think, and 78, and he was coaching in Maine and everything else. And he says, one thing I didn't like about Fred Sherrill, he said that Fred Sherrill is using me as a whipping boy all the time.
Oh. Fred seemed like a very unusual man. Just from reading
him
back.
Yeah, he was. You know, I didn't even bother with that. You know, he put stuff in my locker all the time and everything else. I didn't even understand what the hell he was saying half the time. I'd say, Fred, what are you trying to tell me?
Just
explain it to me.
And could he?
Oh, no, not really.
he had his own way of doing things. That's all there was to it. I mean, some people are just like that. I mean, they live in their own little world, you know, and they expect you to know exactly what they want you to know. You know?
But, I mean, no, that's right.
You've had but how many different coaches did you have over the years, over the 13 years?
Oh, I don't know.
It's,
you know, I had Boston, I had Oakland, I had Philly, I had two different coaches or three different coaches in Philly.
Right.
So.
Well, the bottom line is you play the same no matter who's coaching you. You play hard and you play to win. And was losing difficult for you? Losing games?
Not really. You know, when I was in Oakland, we didn't win too many games, so you got used to losing. But,
right.
You know, that was just part of life at the time. So, shit,
It's good to experience stuff like that because you really have to be a good loser. It's not easy to be a good loser sometimes. I know I'm not good at it.
No.
And the more competitive get, the more I would guess the harder it gets sometimes to lose. And you know, it's not easy to lose.
No.
This book, when you started, when you sat down and started to write it, was it easy to write for you?
No, very hard. It took us a long time to get it going, and you know, I had a ghostwriter and a lady named Randy Jusen out of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, my wife helped a lot. So, doing all this stuff, it was.
Did you have a diary though while you were playing?
No.
At all?
No, I did all this through my head.
All in your head. No. It's all up there somewhere.
Yeah.
Instead, had to pull it all out. Yeah.
Somewhere. I'm not sure what it is, but it was there.
And wives remember a lot more too, so that I'm sure that helped you out too. Like you said, it's easy to.
Well, my ex was she helped me out a lot. So,
Do you have any regrets at all of anything?
No,
nothing.
Part of my life learning. That's all it is.
One big learning experience.
Can't do anything about it.
Are you still learning today?
Yeah. You know, it's like. I'm still learning today. I try to learn one thing every day.
So what do you learn? What are you learning today? What are
like
some?
I don't really, you know, I'm just, you know, what I always try to learn something every day. I'm not sure what, you know, it's, you know, I'm learning off you, off the way you're talking and the way you're asking questions and how you do your interviews and, you know, so I try to pick up stuff from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As I go along, and you know, that's the part. That's who I am today. So it's something that I have learned. That I talked to the kids about that also. I said, you know, the young kids. I said, you know, try to learn one thing every day. Doesn't matter what it is. Try to learn something.
And reading the book, reading about your life then, your about your life now. It doesn't seem like you've changed an awful lot as far as how you treat people. You seem to have always treated people very, very well. Has that always been the case with you?
Always, yes.
And
always.
How did you? And who instilled that in you? Were your parents good at teaching you that?
I think my how my mom were around the house and everything. And my parents had brought me up, and that was installed. I think I learned that a lot. The people that I lived with in Flin Flon as a 16-year-old, and you know how kind they were to people all the time, and you know, the thing I learned is always be nice to people, and you know, don't knock them down, or you know, build them up all the time, and you know, that's the way life is.
And you were a little wild when you were younger too. Back before you played hockey, I mean.
No wilder than anybody else.
No, probably not. But I it was remarkable reading about that in the book, and I thought, you know, you're not afraid to lay it all out there, which is nice. I mean, what's the purpose of a book if you're in a whole bag?
Why should I be? You know, things that happen, and you know, you just go with your life, and you know, the thing I learned about life is that when you tell the truth, people get mad at you.
Yeah, exactly.
And, because they don't want to hear it.
Yes.
And I think that's a bad part. I think it's a great teaching if people would tell the truth all the time instead of beating around the bush and stretching out a lot of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why do that? You know, that's, I don't understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people bitch and complain about everything and, you know, you can't do anything about it. You just gotta go with it and, like you said, we were just talking a while ago, is that, you know, if there's stuff that I would change, you know, there's, you ever hear that song, Willie Nelson, nothing I can do about it now?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel about it. You know, you can reflect back to all a lot of stuff, but why shed tears over something that you have no control of?
But you did have, you still had a ton of a lot of fun too.
Oh yeah, hockey was always fun. You know, I played hockey as a fun thing, so it's nothing that you know, I loved the game of hockey, and I lost interest in playing hockey my first couple of years in Boston because I wasn't playing. And you know, from playing regular in junior hockey and being the superstar for years in junior hockey, all of a sudden you go to Boston, which was great to be drafted by them. But I never played for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that had to be very hard for you.
I lost interest of playing. Mm-hmm. Well, it was. I lost interest in playing. And then when I was traded to Oakland, it was great. And then, downfall of Oakland, I take blame for some of that because I knew better at that time and I should have just took over leadership and stuff like that. And I didn't. So I take a part of that because of, I learned as a junior player that, I was a great leader in junior my last year there as a captain of the team. And I knew about leadership and stuff like that. And I didn't, and then I think being First Nation and being shy at the time as a young kid is that maybe I didn't think it was my thing to do. I should be stepping in and trying to take over the leadership.
Mm, exactly. So what is your day like? What are your typical days like today? You have your school, you said, and I mean, what do you generally do?
Well, we have hockey school. My son and I have hockey schools across Canada, but we're pretty slow right now. But we teach 2,000 kids a year.
That's a lot of kids.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, are these? Are these generally nice kids and kids that have been brought up well? And I mean, what do you do if you have a really?
It's all the way across Canada. A lot of First Nation communities and a lot of poor communities we go into. But it's a mixture of everything. It's not. We just don't do. First Nation kids. We do, we do everybody. Everybody's invited. I'm a big believer of do things together and the world would be better.
Exactly.
Better separating things.
That's great. So you're doing some really good things for people. That's really nice. And you're still doing that after all these years. You're giving back, as they say, giving back to your community. And that's so important. Imagine if everybody did that. Can you imagine what a world we'd live in?
Well, even if everybody did one good thing a day, that'd be great.
It really would be. It really would be.
That's the way I look at life today. Is that I try to help people as much as I can. I'm happy. I live off my big pension I get from the National Hockey League.
Right.
I get to speak now. I actually became a good speaker.
Well, that's what.
And I can speak in front of these 500 or 600 people, and it doesn't bother me anymore.
Right. Did it at first? Was it nerve wracking at first?
Oh, I was the worst speaker ever. Worst speaker ever. I used to, the thing is that when I went, I didn't start speaking until probably 90, 91, 92 in that area.
Right.
And because I was too shy to speak in public. And then when I did start, I used to write everything down. And when you write stuff down, you don't really, everything is jerky. You forget. And,
right.
And you're sort of reading it stuff. But then after that, I said, heck with this shit. I said, I'm going to just speak from the heart. And ever since then, it's great. I know where I'm going with it. I know what I want to talk about, what subjects, and I just go from there.
Yeah, I get nervous interviewing people. I mean, I'm always a nervous wreck before I interview certain people.
I get nervous the first two, especially when I got to wait, and then all of a sudden they announce you, and then they show a tape of you for three or four minutes. And it's like, to me, it was like doing a hockey game, national anthem. You're always nervous.
Yeah.
Till that whistle drops.
And then you're rabid.
There you go.
It's like, then you're in your element.
And after that, that's the way I speak all the same thing. I said, I'm waiting there, you're nervous, and all of a sudden you get out, and your first 30 seconds, you're nervous, and once that, you get over that, and then you just go.
That's exactly, and that's the way life is, actually. You just do it. You just have to do it, because if you don't do it, you get introverted, and being introverted isn't really a good way to be a lot of times, It can really do some, coming from somebody who's like that, who tends to be very shy, I know what it can do to you. It leads to a lonely life sometimes, Well, it has been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. I should mention the book again, My Story, Reggie Leach, The Riverton Rifle by Greystone Books. It's been great to have you. By the way,
You're out of New York?
I'm sorry?
Oh, you're out of where? New York?
I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm outside of Philly. I'm in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Oh, you're in Westchester.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask you what the significance of this date on the book was, 11/27/74. What was the significance of that day?
Oh, you're talking about that picture on the front.
Yes, yeah, I am.
That was my first hat trick with the Flyers.
That was your first hat trick. That's what I kind of suspected. I wondered, you look so happy there.
Yeah. That was a good pitcher and a good, so. You know, the thing is that, I don't, I do a lot of speaking up here. I don't do too much speaking in Philadelphia, so. I would love to have a chance to come up and speak there in a few places, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm sure they'd love to have you. Everybody remembers you. It's been a great pleasure, Reggie. Thank you so much. And this has been David's Book Talk.
Thank you very much, and thanks for being so kind and interesting about the story and that. And again, a big thank you to you too also.
You're welcome. And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.